And the present is going to very much shape what we have in the future in terms of our population size and composition. Now, from a demographic perspective, when you're thinking about those intergenerational relationships, the concept that demographers tend to focus on is that of dependency. And that is, what is the relationship of those who are dependent to those who are independent? And those who are dependent are tamariki and kaumātua, and those who are independent are those of the working age. And when you've got that ratio at its lowest point, that is, dependence to those who are have the potential to generate revenue through working in the labour force, that's when you've got your maximum economic potential. It's what's called the demographic dividend. Now, New Zealand has had its demographic dividend, and most economists and demographers would argue that we squandered our national demographic dividend. But we have another opportunity to realise a second one, a collateral one, which comes through the relational relationship of what we have here on the left-hand side, which is a rapidly ageing Pākehā population, which is still the dominant population in Aotearoa, where the median age is about 40. This is 2006 data, but so it's a bit older now. And on the right-hand side, where we have a very youthful Māori population, the same can be said of our Pasifika population. And so where's the opportunity there? The opportunity is that increasingly, and at a very rapid rate, our population is entering structural ageing. In some regions, the number of elderly people, or the number of olders, 65 years and older, has outnumbered the number of tamariki, and that's the future that we're heading towards. For the Māori population, because we're youthful, we still have a very strong triangular shape as compared to a rectangular shape, and that is a shape of growth. And an increasing proportion, well, a large proportion of our people are still at those tamariki ages. They are the future workforce. They are the future economic engine. But it's only a window of opportunity and time that needs to be capitalised on. It's a structural gift, but it's what we do with that gift to take us forward that really matters. Okay, so what do we need to do? I think we need to champion our rangatahi. We've got a lot of discourse about how we need to rethink what ageing is about, positive ageing, you know, making the most of our older population. And that's true. And actually for Māori, our number of kaumātua has doubled in the last 10 years. So we do have a rapidly increasing number of older people, but at a population level, we're still young. So investing in our rangatahi is really important. And this is not in a kind of Whitney Houston, the children are our future type investment. I think it's actually a paradigmatic shift in how we see our rangatahi. You know, instead of a risk to be managed, they're a taonga to be nurtured in the context of a shrinking labour force. They are actually an economic resource. And it might sound quite crude to put it in that way, but from a population perspective, that's absolutely what our rangatahi are. And so I think that Jamie mentioned before, or was it Amar, that what's the return we're going to get on our investment in our asset? Now, what's the return we're going to get on our investment in our rangatahi, and what sort of investment are we going to put into our rangatahi? And I absolutely agree that education is part of that, but I don't think that's where it ends. Okay, moving on to the next, because there's only 3 points. I think people only can take home three take-home points, so I'm going to move briskly to the next one. Now, the next one is, I mean, how many of us have got whanaunga who live overseas? Everyone, right? And my whānau, between my father and my uncle, 7 mokopuna, 1 born in New Zealand. So, you know, the diaspora is not this kind of abstract concept that exists out there. It touches us at a personal level. It's in our whānau, our community, our hapu, our iwi, our nation, the world. So what makes us distinctive as Indigenous peoples in colonised, wealthy, developed, settler states is that we have a very large proportion of our people living overseas, and that's increasing. Now, our Pacific, Jamie was talking about our Pacifica cousins. Yes, many of the Pacific Island nations have a very high proportion of their people living overseas as well. And that's been a reality for a very long time. And remittances back to the country of origin is a very important part of economic growth. But I think what makes us distinctive in Te Ao Māori is that we are living in a highly developed economy, but our relationship with Australia means that we have a very significant income gap. Australia basically acts as a hoover. It's hoovering people out of our communities. And there's opportunities that come with that. Many whānau, many of my whānau who live in Australia think that they've got many opportunities that they wouldn't have here. But there's also challenges. And with one in five, or approaching one in five Māori living overseas, I think one of the challenges for future generations is how do you connect the generations when those generations aren't even at home? And I agree with you, Tracy, that we need to be thinking about ourselves as global citizens. But there's also challenges in terms of how do you maintain those connections, not just economically. So how do you leverage those networks, that knowledge base, that talent, those skills, those communities? How do you leverage that for mutual benefit? But also, how do we leverage, for example, our te reo and tikanga resources here that might benefit our whanaunga overseas? Because when you look at the Australian data, the proportion of our whanaunga over there that's able to speak te reo Māori is very minimal. About 6% overall and about 2% for those who are Australian-born. And one-third of all Māori who live in Australia are actually Australian-born. Okay, so how do we make those connections? So I think it's got to be a relationship of reciprocity. And I also think it means that we have to think beyond New Zealand as the nation state. You know, Te Ao Māori cross-cuts the nation. You know, most of our development models are circumscribed within Aotearoa as a state, as a place. I'm not convinced that that's actually a fit-for-purpose model to take us into the future. Given that this is our demographic reality, it's not going to change anytime soon. And the third one is our point of difference is transnational Indigenes. Now, there's a lot of anxiety, I think, about the losses, the human capital losses, the te reo losses of our people overseas. But how do we redefine that as an asset? How do we make that work for us, given this is our reality? By the way, I don't have the solutions. These are just some questions. And the third point I want to pick up on, and this is from my own role here in Waikato Tainui, I'm not saying that we're any worse than anyone else. Okay, it's just safer to pick an example from my backyard so I know who I'm getting slapped by. But, you know, we've had a lot of change in terms of how we conceptualise Māori development, from closing the gaps, which served a purpose for some time. Then we got sick of being deficit theorised, always being contrasted against the other, always found to be wanting, and the lens and the interpretation, the explanation for those gaps was you're not doing well enough, you don't value education enough. If only you assimilated more or tried harder, that gap would be closing. Of course, that was a load of rubbish. And development aspirations, development narratives, development models have changed dramatically in the last 20 years. We've seen the Māori potential approach, Tēnā koe, Tā Meihana. We've seen whānau order. We've seen the rise of the Māori economy. And these are all positive development, self-determining aspirations for where we want to be, how we conceptualise wellbeing beyond GDP, how we integrate the cultural with the human, te mea te mea. But let's not forget that inequality, pervasive inequality, still does exist. And even if we turn our lens away from comparing ourselves to Pākehā, and that's not a fit-for-purpose model in the future either with the rapid growth of the Asian ethnic population. So even if we turn the lens away from looking at gaps and inequalities between ourselves and Pākehā population, if we turn that lens in on ourselves, we're going to find just as much inequality among us. And I suspect the mechanisms that have sustained inter-ethnic inequality might be the same mechanisms that will sustain intra-Māori inequality. And I think given that we're on this cusp, this period in time where we've got more of an opportunity to be self-determining and to monarchy each other in ways that weren't possible 20 years ago, having an eye to the growing divide is something that morally we have an obligation to do. So just a few questions that fall out of that. I'm mindful of the time. What level of, again, I have no questions. These are just a big question, no answers, big question mark up there. What level of future inequality are we comfortable with? You know, there's going to be some inequality, but what level can we live with? How can we avoid replicating systems of inequality? How can we avoid the intergenerational transmission of privilege on one hand and paucity on the other? Is that a future that we want for our tamariki, for our mokopuna? It's not what I want. And what's most important, equality of opportunity or equality of outcomes, and how are those two things connected? And finally, I don't think this is just an intergenerational future forward-looking challenge. It's a present challenge, and it's intra-generational. It's between us as well. Kia ora.